When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
On the 15th of December at the Camden Powerhouse in London Town. Well, not Santa Claus, but me. Cabaret legend Lenny Beige, as I host my very special Regency Rooms Christmas extravaganza. It's an old-school variety show with some of the names that made my club the talk of the town and some of the very best new acts working the circuit today. Plus, there might even be a household name or two thrown in for good measure. Add to that a band of world-class session players, and you've got the greatest Christmas variety show out there. There's literally no show like it. Tickets are from £25. Just visit ctickets.com. That's ctickets.com and enter Regency Rooms and get booking.
Hello and welcome to Footballistically Arsenal. It's a special Sunday night edition. Like, special purely for the reason that we can't do it tomorrow as we normally do it, so we're pulling it forward. Fresh reflections on Arsenal v Newcastle from me, Boyd Hilton, him, Josh Landy in his Soho House style office, and special guest Ollie Shorts, chocolate magnate, currently Yoda lookalike. He's wearing a hoodie, listeners, and he's a bit cold. Hi, Ollie.
Good evening. Great to be here.
Great to be here. Thank you. Thank you. Yes, already Josh has something to ask.
Well, I mean, before we get into the important details, we must talk about the scoreboard, I feel, Boyd.
Yes, yes, we must.
They've listened to you. I wasn't sure that our podcast had power until I saw the improvements in the podcast on Saturday.
Yeah, I think it's clearly down to us. We were the first people to point out. I don't care about any of the other 100 or so Arsenal podcasts or blogs or Twitter accounts. We were the ones who drew everyone's attention to the fact that they couldn't fit the two teams' lineups on the electronic scoreboard, and some dunderhead had decided to kind of toggle between the two teams in an insane manner. But lo and behold, on Saturday against Newcastle, both teams fully there. Not only that, I saw some new graphics, Josh. I think when something happened, like it was either a corner or I think it was a yellow card or something like that, or time, how much time there was left. And there was like a big clock graphic. They've definitely like hired a new company or got some new boffin in who knows what they're doing when it comes to...
What was remarkable about the score, the scoreboard, was how long it did take to change. Literally, you look at it and you're just like, is it going to change? And you kind of look at it for a little bit longer, then you give up. And by the time you've gone back to it, it was still on Arsenal.
It was like a memory test, wasn't it? It was like, can you remember? You're looking at the screen to work out which of the opposition players just grotesquely fouled, you know, whoever, Tucker, probably. And then it's gone from the screen. It's like a memory test. Can you remember who the name when you quickly looked at the number on the thing? Yeah, it was absolutely preposterous. But they fixed it. I do, however, Josh, have other issues I'd like to address in the kind of... It still takes a long time to get in with the electronic cards. Yes. Oh, yeah. You have a story to tell?
I didn't get in for kickoff.
Right.
Yeah.
Because...
Well, gate F was incredibly busy, and I don't really understand why. But then gate G next to us wasn't that busy, and eventually they beckoned a whole load of people after. I never knew. Did you know this, Ollie? You can go in on the gate next to you. It works.
I did know that.
I never knew that. I've stood in gate F like a lemon, looking at jealously at G as they all pass in.
I did know, but not that I've ever actually moved turnstiles. But I did check for the AFC Wimbledon game. We did go and get tickets in a different area. We wanted a different view. And I think we missed, because of some issue getting in, we didn't turn up till about half an hour into the game. It was terrible. Wow. And you know, that was just before the Spurs game. So the Spurs game, we got in like super, super early. But I don't know what is going on with Arsenal at the moment with these issues at the turnstile. And it just takes forever, doesn't it? It's just, yeah. it's absolute madness. But what you can do, I don't think anyone cares to try and change it. We did stop going up the stairs to be checked in, and they did it at the turnstiles after the first game. I don't know.
What happened for you, boy? Did you have a bad experience?
It was mainly that it's really a slow process. It's the people in front. It's people trying to get their phones working for the phone entry. I think the phone entry is the biggest problem. I just don't think it's working particularly well. Like the idea that you can... So they sent out cards, you know, these credit card size cards, sometimes with actual credit cards on them. And that they're pretty easy to use. But they kind of encourage everyone to use your wallet, you know, the app and the wallet and all that. And it's just people just like fumbling around with their phones, trying to get the light on. And it's just infuriating. It gets everyone kind of anxious because, I mean, I'll be honest with you, by the way, we did leave it way too late to arrive at the ground. Obviously we had a lovely breakfast in Islington, and we couldn't get a cab in time to get to Holloway Road. And it's one of those things, it's too long away from there to the ground to walk, and it's kind of like, you know, you have, but it's quite really hard to get a cab, you know, and to order one in advance. So we kind of got there about 5 minutes to spare, and was then desperate to get in. And they're also officious about rucksacks, and you know, it's just officiousness.
Sounds like you were almost a little bit to blame yourself.
Yes, I admit that. I'm admitting that. We did get there way too late, despite the fact that I kept saying during breakfast, I need to order a car, and then I never got around to a car. Was it
an Uber you got?
No, we got a black cab in the end. We were very lucky. Cab. Yeah, we got a big new black cab. Yeah, all five of us or whatever. Yeah, could get in.
Oh, nice.
So it was it was fine. And it was a very lovely breakfast, I must say. And one of our party, get this, Ollie. We had, you know, I had like roasty potatoes and fried eggs, and you know, people were having omelets. But one of our party, I'm going to name him Dom. Dom Baldwin had snails. Yes.
Breakfast.
Yeah, for breakfast.
I mean, I'm going to say, like, I quite like a snail, but not for breakfast. Yeah.
No, I mean, he had breakfast as well. So he had, like, I think he had, like, an omelette as well. But he had a portion of snails.
What, 11 a.m.? He's tucking away some snails.
11:30 a.m., yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, actually, a massive difference, yeah.
Actually, 10:30 a.m. I think we arrived at 10:30 a.m. No, in fact, it might even be earlier. Yeah, extraordinary. So
I didn't even know you could get the sales for breakfast. I didn't even know that there was a thing. That was a, you know.
Yeah, I mean, he went off piece. He went off menu, obviously, but the lovely people at the lovely restaurant gave him the snails that he so craved.
And then because you then ate like snails, you left the restaurant too late and you didn't make the game.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. It is true. And my other complaint, which isn't my fault, is that on club level, right, famously, part of the whole point of us paying a vast amount of money for our tickets on club level is you get free drink half-time, alcoholic beverage.
I'm not sure looking for sympathy from having the amount of money to spend on club level is
no,
the right
no,
way
no, 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 right. no, 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 no. People spend their, you know, it's their biggest outlay. It's my biggest outlay, you know, is my Oscar ticket. And lots of normal people, I say this all the time on club level. But right, they give out free bottles of Camden Hells Lager, which is a lovely, refreshing drink. You have to queue up. It's a morass of people. And there's like one guy, you know, in our bit, one guy with this fucking loads and loads of these bottles, and he's dealing with like hundreds of people, and they have a one per person policy. So you can't get, So you have to, all of you have to queue up together to get a fucking bottle each of this locker. Now, what is the fucking point of that? Are they, you know, they're worried they're going to run out too quickly? So what it means is, instead of having like 30 people queuing up for two or three bottles for them and their friends, you've got one person queued up with hundreds of people all surrounding him trying to get a fucking bottle. It is ridiculous.
Yeah. What do you think the best solution would be? They need more people dotted around doing the
beer? I mean, more people dotted around. Just let people, just chillax. Just let people have one or just let them have two, one each at least. You know, who's on their own, you know, getting one bottle per person? It's ridiculous. Ridiculous rule.
Did you get one yourself?
Yes, I got one. And then luckily, Dom of the Snails controversy was behind me and managed to get two, you know, for Dermot himself.
So, How long does it take to get your beer? Are you missing the start of the second half?
Well, I mean, I know because I'm pretty good at making sure I don't. But people do. I mean, loads of people do. Yeah, for that reason. Yeah. If you look at the TV pictures, you'll see. Yeah, people always assume, you know, that the club level people are swanning around having, you know, prawn sandwiches. And Dermot reminded me that in the very early days of club level, they actually had an oyster and champagne outlet in our bit, right? And it lasted about a week because it was so ridiculous. No one was interested. Like, because people are normal people, we're not all fucking coffee, champagne, oysters. Anyway, it takes quite a long time, and that is partly why there is a late arrival back from half time on club level, because everyone's queuing up to find their fucking free drink.
Is Dom leading the campaign to get the oysters back so he can have his oysters?
I think he probably would. Yeah, well, I don't know. Yeah, I think he probably would.
Anyway, see how influential this podcast is. Yeah. If we can bring
We will see.
I remember in the West Stand at Highbury, there was always the guy selling bagels, wasn't there?
Bagels, one, yeah.
Missed it. They did have a very good bagel stand. And I remember when I was, my season ticket was in the West Upper at Highbury. And it was an absolute delight. They did a wonderful chicken mayo. It was delicious.
Yeah. When I used to go, lovely bagels. It seemed like luxury that we had those. Yeah, lovely bagel and coffee at half time. It was very civilized, you know, despite like 57,000 or however many people were there, you know, when you could stand. Anyway, we should probably talk about the match. Come on, let's get to the point, I guess. Were you there, Ollie?
No, I actually wasn't. I was supposed to go, but then last minute family emergency. And it happens. It's one of those things. And
you had the TV coverage.
I watched my dad came over and we watched it together on BT Sport, and it was very cold outside, so a little bit of me at half time, it's like, well, I've lucked out here. But you want to be there, you want to get the atmosphere, you want to you don't want to miss a game. But the TV coverage was excellent, so I can't complain, and we got a great result.
Well, you had the excellent Martin Keown on duty, so that was all part of the good coverage. Boyd, I wasn't aware until later. There was obviously a lot of problems for the Newcastle fans travelling. Did you hear about this?
Yeah,
problems on the train travel. But there is a reality, you know. You see people sort of asking for delayed kickoffs and things like that. And it obviously is frustrating, a few hundred people travelling the length of the country. I mean, the problem is that the game's at 12:30. You know, for people to get from Newcastle, it's ridiculous, but we're all sadly used to it. And, you know, we all travel to Old Trafford, don't we, on Thursday night with no trains back, and it's ridiculous.
Which I think is an 8:15 kickoff, isn't 8:15. It? Fucking ridiculous, yeah.
8:15. But sadly, just with the way of the world and, you know, hundreds of millions of people, you know, watching certain TV slots, I think reality of getting these things moved is incredibly difficult. But I thought just talking about the lineup, I really felt Odegaard was going to come back in. I changed my fantasy league draft team and brought Odegaard in. And I thought it was all about him. I was a little bit surprised to see Tavares if I'm honest. I thought he might. And I just wondered about Lokonga. I thought he had a pretty poor start to that second half at Anfield, and maybe there was going to be an opportunity for Maitland-Niles, even Elneny. But in the end, it was just one change.
Yeah, I thought, I don't know about you, Ollie, but I thought Arteta kind of, I thought it was a bit of a triumph for him, because I would say before the game, when we read out the team news to everyone, I think everyone was surprised that Tierney wasn't back in, because I don't think Tavares had the best game against Liverpool. I mean, well, he wasn't the only one, but he definitely, you know, he was definitely run pretty ragged in that game and made the odd cock up. I mean, gave the ball away a couple of times in key moments. So it was a genuine surprise that he retained his position. And he was brilliant, wasn't he? I mean, he had an amazing game. Highlighted on Match of the Day. I don't know if they... I haven't actually watched it back yet on BT Sport, which I normally do. But they had a whole epic section devoted to how good he was on Match of the Day. So that decision was a triumph. Now, I think we need to have an in-depth discussion about Odegaard, because our WhatsApp group is dominated by Odegaard talk. So I think, to put it bluntly, Dan Baldwin, who, you know, former weekly person on this podcast, now all too rare visitor to Arsenal as well, it has to be said. He's a busy man. He thinks Odegaard is not particularly happy with Odegaard. He's not a fan, I would say. In fact, let me read out. I'm going to read out what he said in our chat about him. Last night, Here we go. He's slow, ploddy, slows down our attacks. I would have rather have spent 40 million elsewhere, but we've got him now, so good luck to him and us. Ollie, what's your feeling about?
I kind of get where he's coming from, because he hasn't come in and, you know, I don't think he's, you know, been a shining light of this Arsenal side, especially when you look at, you know, some of the other new players that have come in. You know, there's a player in there. There's, you know, for sure there's a player in there. You know, I think our WhatsApp group were having a discussion about Partey. There's a player in there, but he's not come to the forefront of, you know, what's making Arsenal tick at the moment. I think he's a superb player, but at the moment it sometimes takes a while for players just to get used to it, get up to speed with the Premier League. I know he had half a season, but, you know, we've got to give him a bit of time. But I also just don't... Our attack is still an issue. We still struggle to break teams down. And it's something that Arteta just needs to have a look at. I think when Lacazette came in and we sort of went to that 4-4-2, it worked for a little bit. But actually, I think Aubameyang's been... He's the one that's not performing at all. He seems a little bit lost. I don't know how long it took for him to get into the game, yet alone a touch. I think his first touch was the open goal miss, pretty much. But, you know, I think there's not just Odegaard. I think there's Odegaard, there's Partey, there's Aubameyang, and they all need to step up. And if they can, then we can hopefully get, you know, a good result on Thursday and Monday in what I think are two very tough games.
Would you pick Odegaard in that game against Man U?
Yeah, I would. No, I would. I think a little bit of me feels that actually the player that I would drop would be Aubameyang. I just think that Lacazette just does offer a little bit more up front at the moment with his hold-up play versus what Aubameyang's doing. But then, you know, can you really drop Oba? I don't know, but he did do it last season on, you know, plenty of times when he was on the bench after that poor run of form. You know, I don't know, but I would start Odegaard for sure. I don't think that one performance should mean that you just exit the team. And I think that's why Tavares, you know, kept his place, because I think that was his sixth start in a row. And he has been pretty solid, apart from a game against Liverpool where I don't think one player, apart from Ramsdale, you know, cover themselves any glory.
Yeah, that's fair. What do you think, Josh? Do you think, are you pro Odegaard broadly, or do you have doubts?
I'm somewhere on the fence, I think, really. I think he's been given plenty, you know, of opportunity. I think he's pretty much played a part in every game since coming into the team against Man City in that thumping we got at the Etihad. He has been at least given opportunities off the bench in a way that you can go, well, Pepe hasn't. Martinelli obviously did on Saturday, but hasn't been given at all times. So I think Arteta must, must fancy him, pretty significantly, and that seems obvious in the way that, he went from being on loan to Arteta presumably forcing through a move for him to sign permanently. You want to see more of an output. I mean, he's got one goal, hasn't he, so far?
Mm. Direct assist, free kick as well.
The free kick at Burnley, wasn't it? I don't think he's had an assist yet this season.
He had a really good free kick against Newcastle, didn't he? Which was unlucky. Which
well,
was really
it was fine, the free kick. I thought it was one of them.
It was good. I thought it was good.
The goalkeeper's helped to make it look better. Okay. It's not in the corner. It's okay. Floated in. The goalie will save that, I think, more than nine times out of ten. So, look, I think there's a player. I think he'll persist with him. I think he will probably start at Old Trafford. And hopefully there's more to come. And so, too, from Aubameyang. I wouldn't be dropping Aubameyang. I mean, you wouldn't say a freak miss. It's certainly you must have had a very good view from your vantage point, Boyd, up of Aubameyang's miss.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. Yeah, it was horrific. I think it got to him. He looked didn't happy, did he? From what I could see on the highlights,
it was remarkable. But it wasn't. If you go back to the Watford game as well, missed penalty he stole Odegaard's goal. Was it when Saka scored and it was given offside? Actually, Oba should have controlled the ball better and scored into an empty net. So he should have had at least three or four goals in the last two games, and he's mustered none. So it's a slight concern for sure.
I mean, Man United dropped Ronaldo today. So anything could happen. And it reminds me a little bit of that situation in a way. Aubameyang was kind of pressing, wasn't he? Which famously, I want to talk about the brilliant discussion of Ronaldo, by the way, on Sky. I don't know if you saw the Carragher, Roy Keane argument, which was fantastic. I feel like there's Oba's like sometimes presses from the front, and kind of he can do it really well. Like there was a period not too long ago, I think, where he was seemingly doing it really well, but then against Newcastle he didn't seem to be doing that very much. I mean, not that Newcastle posed much of a threat, but when they occasionally did, he didn't seem to contribute to any great attempt to press the ball at all. But my thing with Odegaard is I'm kind of on the fence as well. I do feel, where I think Dan is right, I do think he slows us down. Like, I think we'd be much more dynamic in the last month or so without him, with Lacazette behind Aubameyang in that 4-4-1-1 kind of setup. I just think Lacazette is even though he's getting on a bit, he's actually really one of our most dynamic athletic players, and kind of... I'm not saying his pace is amazing at his age, but he just lights up the attack. Yeah. And Odegaard is a different kind of player, isn't he? He's kind of noodling around. But I think we have a bit too much noodling around. And certainly in the first half against Newcastle, I thought we were pretty poor generally.
Noodling.
Sorry, Josh? Well, yeah, noodling. It's not a word. It's a word.
It's not a word you associate usually with football lingo.
Well,
it's more something you'd probably have for your lunch or breakfast with Dom and the rest
super
of them
noodling
around in Islington.
Super
somewhere.
Noodling, yeah. But that's what we do often, Arsenal. When at our worst, when we're faced with, the low block or whatever, and we're faced with a defensive formation against us, we often just noodle it around and pass back and pass in the, pass sideways and all of that. Whereas I feel one of the great things about the 4-4-1-1 with Lacazette and Aubameyang, I thought he solved that, and I thought our attack had started to look better, Ollie. So I fear slightly that I wouldn't play Odegaard against Man United. I would go back to the 4-4-1-1 that was more dynamic until the new... Because really, the Newcastle game was two amazing goals, right? For me, one great goal, one beautiful goal. From Martinelli, but actually I didn't think the performance was. It was like against the team at the bottom, and we were certainly the first half we were pretty mediocre.
Newcastle were very well drilled. You have to say that new manager in
they are
their lines across the field. I don't think it was ever going to be a walking point. They are in a massive relegation fight from now. They were going to dig in. I think Arsenal's performance was absolutely like par, fine, not brilliant. Yeah. But definitely not terrible. Did enough to win the game,
but not as good as we have been with Lacazette playing instead of Odegaard.
I think that as Josh mentioned, the new manager's come in. He came to park the bus, really, ultimately. That's, you know,
yeah.
That's that, that. And actually, you know, they did have a few opportunities to get a goal. You know, the penalty was very iffy. You've seen them given. Yep. You know, thankfully yep. for us, it, you know, it went in
Odegaard
in our favour. So it was one of those results where, you know, when you're aiming for something, you know, we're aiming for, you know, a European spot, you're just like, yeah, job done, move on. Nothing fancy, wasn't spectacular. We did exactly what we needed to do, as Josh said. And I was pretty happy with it. Sometimes you just want those results. You just want those performances. You can't have you can't have a 3-1 versus Spurs, you know, every week.
Yeah. You say it was not spectacular, but I mean, the goal, Martinez's goal, was beautiful and spectacular. I mean, wasn't it? It was like, I think it was, I'm so pleased for him.
Because that was down in my corner, and I have to say, one of the most enjoyable sort of viewing experiences you can have to those of us in Block 12. I at first, I almost thought somebody else was possibly just put a bit too much on it. And if you look back at it, Martinelli doesn't really have time to even look where the goalkeeper is coming. Mm. It's so instinctive just to get a great connection on the ball and put it sort of goalwards. And I don't think maybe Dubravka's expecting a sort of first-time shot. And by the time he reacts, it's too late. It was beautiful. And just as Martinelli came on, a friend who was with me was, you know, referencing that goal against Chelsea, and we were sort of trying to work out when that was, and concluded when it was sort of January 2020, and we're not far off two years away. And there haven't been enough, you know, amazing moments of Martinelli. So it was so nice that not only will people immediately think of that goal at Chelsea, I think this one will be there as well. A beautiful finish.
And he had another opportunity. He had another fantastic run, kind of a bit later, didn't he? He lost control of the ball at the last minute. But that could have been. He had another brilliant chance, Ollie. I think it's interesting with Martinelli, isn't it? Because he's like he's come on as a sub a lot. You know, he hasn't had many starts in those 2 years. And I feel like often he doesn't get long enough to show us what he can do. But he certainly showed us what he can do in that game. And now with your or should we drop Aubameyang? Do you think we should play Martinelli instead?
I'm unsure if we do drop over, but no, I wouldn't start Martinelli. No, I think he's the opportunities that he's actually had this season have been in the League Cup. I think it was against Wimbledon, against Leeds, and he hasn't done it. He never did anything in those games to make me think that, you know, he should be even pressing to start a league game. He kind of, you know, he has lived off that Chelsea goal, you know, an assist by, was it Kante, pretty much, you know, who slips on the halfway line. You know, it was a lovely finish, but that's what everyone remembers him for. But it wasn't some exquisite piece of skill that got him clear in a one-on-one situation. But he scored a lot of goals in the Europa League. And I think sometimes having the Europa League and having the opportunity to play these players more regularly allows them to find that form. And we haven't had that, because ultimately the only real opportunity these fringe players have is in the League Cup, which we've only had two fixtures. Mm. You know, and in seasons gone by, you know, we would have had, you know, another 5 Europa League fixtures for somebody to say, start me. And he hasn't had that opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, with Martinelli, boy, you talk about opportunities, but he played in those opening games of the season against Brentford when we had a striker shortage, and then he was started against Chelsea when we were totally dominated in the 2-0 defeat at home. But since then, he had a total of 11 minutes in Premier League football sort of coming into the Newcastle game. So he really hadn't been given a sniff, really, to all extents and purposes. I think he was on the pitch maybe when we got that late equaliser. Was it against Palace? I think I'm trying to remember. I think he was. So, you know, the very little opportunity, but there is such goodwill. I mean, what a reception he got when he came on.
Yeah.
He's really loved, isn't he? For someone proportionally to what he's played for the club.
Ollie was saying he's lived on that goal, but I think we've lived on that goal. I think it's us that keep you know, thinking about that Chelsea, the goal against Chelsea, and thinking he could do another run like that, which he nearly did yesterday in the game against Newcastle, as I said, and then lost control at the end. So I think it's not him he's been living on. It's us as fans of him, and kind of feel like I whenever I think of him, I think of that goal and that run. And now we've got two brilliant goals to think of, or two with the one yesterday, the one against Newcastle, even better. Well, especially because he doesn't think he showed that much skill in the one against Chelsea.
I think the Chelsea one is, and I think why we think about it so much as fans is it was one of the last away days before lockdown, and for most Arsenal fans it was probably their very last away game, so it's in the back of your mind as a great moment, and we didn't have for 18 months that euphoria that goal brought, so I think that has a part to play in it as well.
I think you're right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. He is a delightful. I think, in the post-match interviews, he's got that brilliant, like, Cockney, South American kind of accent, hasn't he? That kind of, like, floats in and out of various continents as he's speaking. He has, like, brilliant, like, a reliance on a kind of youth Arsenal London phrases in the middle of his... He's just a really, really kind of lovely guy. He seems to be a really likeable presence in the post-match interview. And him and Saka together, the dream ticket when it comes to that. But we should take a break. Obviously, and we've got a huge game to look forward to on Thursday, and we'll talk about that and a bit more about the game on Saturday after this.
If you want an e-bike that doesn't look like it's made for the shopping precinct, something that's less Mr. Bean and more Steve McQueen, check out the range of bikes from London-based Cooler King. From dope 250-watt city bikes to Harley Bobber-inspired 750-watt beasts that can tear your face off while leaving your smile intact. Cooler Kings are made in limited numbers, yet highly affordable. Check them out now on the web at cooler.bike or find them on Instagram with hashtag CoolerKingBike. Cooler.bike. E-bikes that are cool AF.
And we're back. Did you know, by the way, Josh, talking of the break, this was drawn... my attention was drawn to this fact that I did not know until Saturday, when my friends that I was having brunch with, who listen to the podcast very, very delightfully and very, very happy they do religiously every week, that when we go to the ad break, we play... We do like to be beside the seaside. Do you know this? Have you ever listened back? I never listened back. I can't listen to myself, obviously, because I think I sound like a complete fucking idiot. So when we go into the ads, there's a little bit of the Go West theme tune, which is our main theme tune by the Pet Shop Boys. And then there's like this bizarre, I do like to be beside the seaside tune plays out. Were you aware?
I think I was loosely aware. I thought that was your personal choice, Boyd. I thought you'd be insisting on that. We can presumably speak to the relevant production authorities to change it if you don't like. Yeah. What would you like instead?
Just another bit of Go West, or something, or I don't know, an old Arsenal Cup final song, or Ian Wright's song. I don't know.
I don't know if anything, but the rights on that might be expensive. I don't know
maybe that's why. You've hit the nail on the head, haven't you? Because I bet the Who Would Like to Be Beside the Seaside is probably a no rights. There's no copyright or whatever on that, so you could probably use it for free, I imagine. But it's so random. It's like we're supporting Brighton and Hove Albion or something, because we're not by the sea in any way, shape, or form.
Very much not by the sea.
Anyway.
It's nice that your friends listen to the podcast and give you that kind of feedback while you're sitting there scoffing your snails.
Great feedback. Before we finish talking about the game, as I alluded to in my opening remarks, I do think it was a great day for Arteta, though, because all of his decisions seem to go right. Like, as I said, picking Tavares over Tierney, triumph. Lokonga, as you said, he could have dropped Lokonga instead of AM, had a really good game, one of his best games, I thought. A couple of brilliant passes. Didn't lose the ball very much. Seemed very accurate. Then he brought on Martinelli, and he could have brought on Lacazette. I was quite surprised he brought on Martinelli first, and that worked brilliantly.
I just thought the decision not to bring on Lacazette. Maybe we'll see Lacazette Thursday. I agree.
I agree.
He'll find a way for him to play.
But it all worked for him, you know, and he seemed... And I do, the other thing I was going to say about him in the post-match interview that I saw on Match of the Day, I mean, obviously, post-match interviews and managers are much easier when you've won, but he generally seems more... like, even when we lost against Liverpool, he seems more relaxed and confident and not talking shit, Ollie. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think there was a period when we lost and he would come up with stuff that seemed fairly random and ludicrous, whereas now I think he seems to be speaking in fairly common sense, quite witty and charming. And I think it goes back to that Amy Lawrence interview. Did you? I don't know if you watched that interview, that half-hour kind of insight into him. I just think he's got more... seems a more authentic figure these days.
I think it's his 11 now, isn't it?
Yeah.
And right. and I think, you know, even when you go back to the first three games of the season, it wasn't. And he's never really, I don't think he's ever had, because we were talking about this, you know, at the beginning of the season, you know, who is he going to play? But now you know pretty much who that 11 is going to be, bar maybe one or two, as you'd say. We're talking about, is he going to play Lacazette? Is he going to stick with Tavares or bring in Tierney? But pretty much you know who he's going to play. And I think that, and obviously winning however many games in a row, not losing, and then that defeat to Liverpool. The defeat to Liverpool is, you know, it's an anomaly in the current run. I was really, really disappointed with the actual performance, you know, despite it being Liverpool. But he knows, he's comfortable with what he's got at the moment. And you know, when you win, it buys you time. It gives you goodwill from the fans as well. And you know, for the time being, let him enjoy that, and because he deserves it, especially after the start he's had.
And we're fifth in the league, Josh. You know, it's a pretty good weekend for us, wasn't it? Really, considering West Ham lost, you know, to Man City. Man United drew. You know, we're seeing pretty in fifth, which,
well,
you know,
it's amazing, really. I mean, if you would have, it goes without saying, you know, after the first three games of the season, we would have, you know, absolutely, you know, gone wild for the idea of being fifth, 13 games in. I mean, in some ways, all the more remarkable. We've only scored 15 goals this season in our 13 games. And Newcastle have scored as many goals as us in those in 13 games, and yet they're obviously like rock bottom. And more than that, if you'd have turned around and gone, well, Aubameyang and Smith Rowe, our top scorers, are on four. Lacazette's only contributed one. You wouldn't quite think we would have had enough, really, to find ourselves fifth. And also, we've got a little buffer of 3 points to the teams below. I mean, look, if we're excited how the table looks now, it could look very, I don't think, even if we go to United and lose and get a point at Everton, you know, it's not complete doom and gloom. But if we go there and get a couple of results, wow, we're really going to be in a...
And they've got West Ham. Yeah, they've got West Ham at home.
West Ham at home to come, and Southampton at home to come. Like, It's getting interesting. I mean, in some ways, you just think, oh, you know, just even you think back, well, if we could have beaten Brentford on opening day, you'd have been within four points of Chelsea and stuff like that. So,
It is weird, though. I meant to research this, but I didn't have time. It's fairly amazing that we're fifth in the league and we have a minus goal difference, minus two goal difference.
Yeah.
That is astonishing. So that can't happen normally, can it? That can't be the case that, you know, as you reach December...
Well, it's only the top four that have got positive, right? You've got a few teams that have got zero, but it's only the top four. And I think maybe that just sort of, you know, there's been a few thumpings handed out by some of the sort of big teams to the so-called sort of smaller teams in the league. So, yeah, it's a bit unusual, but I think you sometimes get it where sort of the top teams are, you know, slightly... I mean,
those top three their goal difference is crazy. It's like plus 25, plus... So I don't know, someone plus 30. Yeah. I know.
Chelsea are 26, Man City 20, Liverpool 28 plus 28. Yeah,
you know, it's absolutely mad. I mean, yeah, when you literally just go to West Ham, which is, you know, plus one or two or something like that, and then, you know, us, it was still minus. And if you know, what's also crazy is, you know, we lost 9-0 to Liverpool and Man City in our negative goal difference. So, you know, apart from, you know, those big games and obviously, you know, the Brentford one, we've been really solid. Which is, you know, credit to Arteta and what he's done over the last couple of months. But it could easily change for the worse over the next 4 to 5 weeks.
What do you think about this game at Old Trafford, boy? What do you think?
I don't know what to think about it. It's a real, which is a tough one, isn't it? Because, you know, if fucking Watford hadn't scored those four goals and Man United and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer had still been the manager, which would have been the case, I guarantee you, it was the four goals that did it for him against Watford, then I'd be absolutely confident of getting a draw, if not winning, because they're a shambles, absolutely fucking shambles. But already you can tell that they're shaping themselves up. And I watched the game today, and they looked instantly organised, and they were pressing. You know, second half particularly, they pressed really pretty well, and they have got some. You know, they've got some of the best, loads of world class players. It's astonishing that they're below us in the league. Frankly, the amount of money they've spent, and the Ronaldo issue. I think the Ronaldo issue was pulling them apart and was an absolute disaster for them. And interestingly, Jamie Carragher did have this brilliant argument with Roy Keane. And I tweeted, I don't think even Roy Keane believed what he was saying, because Roy Keane ended up saying, Carragher was like, why did Man United buy Cristiano Ronaldo, you know, hoping that they could be the final step to win the league? And Roy Keane was like, no, we bought him to win cups. And I was like, what are you talking about? They came second in the league last year. And I'm sure, like, when they're buying Sancho and Ronaldo, they're not thinking, oh, we're going to win some cups, are they? I was like absolutely incredulous at what he was saying. And I do think he's brilliantly unbalanced them. Interestingly, your friend and mine, Ricky Lawrence, challenged me on Twitter and disagreed with me. And, you know, he can see why. You know, he was saying, well, Ronaldo is one of the best players in the world, which is what Roy Keane was saying. But if you're one of the best players in the world, you can still disrupt a team, the balance of a team. And that's exactly what he's done, despite all the goals. Anyway, so I'd be fascinated to know whether they're going to play Ronaldo against us for a start, because it's effectively the first game for the new manager, isn't it? Because Michael Carrick had this one game today, and now the new guy, this new German genius, is coming in, who is going to make them press like no other, you know, coach or manager's ever made anyone press, apparently. And how we cope with that and what our tactics are and what our team selection is, it's going to be fascinating. I have no idea what the fuck's going to happen. I think anything could happen. Obviously, literally anything could happen.
Well, you're right in that respect. I think it's probably a good thing we are playing them early on in his reign. If you're trying to change the style of a team quite drastically, I think you probably want to get in early doors before they've really had time to bed in and get used to a new philosophy. I think Gary Neville was on Twitter alluding to, you know, querying quite whether Michael Carrick had really picked the team today, or maybe, you know, the new person, presumably Rennie, was influencing that decision, because it seemed to be quite different to the decisions taken for the important Champions League game away in Villarreal. So, yeah, I think Arsenal will get a result. I think it probably will be a draw, and I think that's, you know, credible and a success, and keeps up this sort of impressive recent period of momentum. And you know what? If we go there and we lose, it's really not the end of the world in terms of, you know, Arsenal's sort of season-long ambitions of trying to hit that fourth spot.
I do think it's important to go there and put in a performance. You know, we can't have a Brighton performance. We can't have a Liverpool and a Man City. I think we've got to go there, and I think, you know, we've got to show that we are capable to actually mix it with the likes of Manchester United, who at the start of the season, you know, they were one of the favourites along with Chelsea, Liverpool and Man City to win the league. And now they're fighting for top four with, you know, West Ham, Arsenal, and who, you know, those are the teams around us. So, you know, their season's completely changed, and you know, in the direction of, right, we just need to make sure that we're in the Champions League places come the end of the 38 games. And I think for us to be able, for the team to believe, to really, really believe that maybe there's a outside chance that we can pip them, I think we've got to go there and have a good performance. Even if, as Josh says, it's not the worst thing in the world if we lose, but we've got to go there and say, you know, come out of it and say, we gave a real good go of it.
Agree. A rousing Churchillian speech.
Well, it's just, though, also, like, our record at Old Trafford over the years, and Ollie and I have been up there many a time together, and I know, Boyd, you've been up there as well. our record there is not amazing over the years. And I think that plays into just the thoughts of, you know, what a draw would be, a big sort of, you know, not a big success, but a strong success. And I think we're capable of doing it. I don't think this is a Liverpool or a City. I think this is more, you know, we can take heart from the way, let's say, we played at Leicester. You know, I think we're all in that sort of similar group of teams at the moment. And, you know, if we can replicate what we did for at least a half at Leicester and what we've seen at other points this season, then we've got a good chance.
So what are you going to go for? What's your official prediction?
1-1, boys.
1-1. Ollie.
Oh, God. I don't think we're going to... I think we'll lose. I think we're going to lose 2-1.
I've got a feeling we're going to lose as well. Sad to say, yeah. I just think the new manager bounce, I feel like they've got to stop, you know, they're getting their act together already a bit, you know, two games, which for them is good. I don't know. I'm going to say 1-0 to them. I'm excruciating 1-0 to Man United, slightly pessimistically.
But then 4 days later, tough. And
we will do a podcast before Everton, won't we, boys?
Yes, of course. Yes.
Ollie, don't get ahead of yourself.
I don't know. You've got only 3 days to do it over the weekend. You might not.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It's going to be a tight squeeze. You're absolutely right. But we'll pull it out of the bag. It is an interesting schedule. Yeah, you're right. It's got a weird Thursday at 8:15, then Monday night football. It's slightly weird.
But if we can get, you know, if we can manage to go and get, I was saying in our WhatsApp group, I think at 4 points would be unbelievable. Absolutely incredible if we managed to get 4 points. Although Ricky disagrees. He thinks we should be, you know, trying to get, you know, he thinks we can easily pick up 6. I don't think that's quite the case.
Easily. Ricky's on controversial form, isn't he?
He's going to message me afterwards. I didn't quite say that. But I said to him, Would you take 4 points now if I gave it to you? He said, no, I'd rather try for 6, which I think is absolute madness. I think if you gave me 4 points tomorrow, I'd take your hand, bite your hand off, move on to the next game in Southampton, and we got, you know, West Ham at home, and we could be in a really, really good position in 4 games' time. But football is a funny old game, and as we know, 1 week, it can all change, and they are two tough away games in any season, despite the form of Manchester United and the form of Everton.
Yeah, no, you summed it up. It's exciting. I mean, I'm, you know, no wonder they're all on Amazon Prime, aren't they? That's why they're slightly weird kickoffs, these midweek games. It's Amazon Prime day, a couple of days.
It is. We've got Tuesday fixtures, Wednesday fixtures, and then we conclude the Amazon Prime the first half of their 2 rounds that they have. They've got a round later in December.
Yeah, Boxing Day, I think. Boxing Day, I think.
Well, I would expect you to know, boys, as a TV aficionado.
Yeah.
I've just had a realisation we are unlikely to do a podcast. I take it back fully.
Really?
I was confused. What do you think, Boyd?
I think we're doing one a week from tonight, can't we? Sunday night.
Okay, we'll do it. We'll do it for the masses. Because of our influence that we found out that we have.
Exactly. And by the way, other rival podcasts do, you know, they do like every fucking game, you know, religiously. So we should take that as an example and work hard.
Anything else you want to change about the stadium, Boyd, while we're here? Just to think about it, where we could get a campaign. Ollie, anything?
Don't get me started on the general catering front. I mean, you know, it still leaves a lot to be desired. The general, but you know, I don't want to.
You've tried to sort of improve that for many years, and that's not really happened. So we need a new focus, really.
You know
maybe
what?
Maybe we can just get the bagel guy back.
Oh, bring back bagels! Yeah, BBB, bring back bagels.
I think we're very, very fortunate that around the ground there is delightful cuisine.
That's true.
You know, we got Islington on our doorstep, and there's plenty of delicious eateries.
Apparently, the food in the press room is amazing. I mean, you must hear this. I'm sure Martin Keown will tell you. You know,
Arsenal are known for it for years. Yeah. I mean, this is going back a couple of decades. Arsenal have always known as like, oh, if you've got a media game at Arsenal, you're okay because you get a lovely meal, you get well looked after.
Yeah, yeah. But sadly, that's not quite filtered down to the. To the public, to the cash spending public, I don't think anyway. Maybe they need to get those caterers on board.
I got a hot chocolate. on Saturday. That was fun.
Do you know what? I'll say this, as we'll sign off with this, because we are witchering on about stuff that is obviously coming across as extremely privileged and entitled. And but the hot chocolate is decent. I'll give you that. Yeah. I will give you that for nothing.
Is
and
it free,
of course, as winter comes. Free at halftime. Yeah, everything's free at halftime.
Tastes even nicer when it's free.
I'm with you there on the hot chocolate front. Good point. Well, mentioned. Ollie, you, being a chocolate magnate, what, remind us of the name of your chocolate company again?
Seed and Bean. We don't do hot chocolate, but we got some delightful Black Friday, Cyber Monday week. Black Friday weekend deal. So go for it.
Maybe you want to branch out into hot chocolate soon, don't you?
Maybe we could be the hot chocolate supplier of Arsenal. That's what they now need to get on the phone, need to get in touch with me.
Yeah.
And we'll sort that out.
Thank you, Ollie. Thanks, Josh. And we will be back, I think, with the podcast after the Man U game, no matter what happens. Cheers. Bye.
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.